Hello, hello, hello. Here's another episode with Marlenka reading Sri Aurobindo, The Synthesis of Yoga, continuing in Chapter 5. An ethical rule merely puts a bit in the mouth of the wild horses of nature and exercises over them a difficult and partial control. But it has no power to transform nature so that she may move in a secure freedom, fulfilling the intuitions that proceed from a divine self-knowledge. At best, its method is to lay down limits, to coerce the devil, to put the wall of a relative and very doubtful safety around us. This, or some similar device of self-protection, may be necessary for a time, whether in ordinary life or in yoga. But in yoga, it can only be the mark of a transition. A fundamental transformation and a pure wideness of spiritual life, these are the aim before us. And if we are to reach it, we must find a deeper solution, a more sure supra-ethical dynamic principle. To be spiritual within, ethical in the outside life, this is the ordinary religious solution, but it is a compromise. The spiritualization of both the inward being and the outward life, and not a compromise between life and the spirit, that is the goal of which we are the seekers. Nor can the human confusion of values, which obliterates the distinction between spiritual and moral, and even claims that the moral is the only true spiritual element in our nature, be of any use to us. For ethics is a mental control. And the limited erring mind is not and cannot be the free and ever luminous spirit. It is equally impossible to accept the gospel that makes life the one aim, takes its elements fundamentally as they are, and only calls in a half-spiritual or pseudo-spiritual light to flush and embellish it. Inadequate, too, is the very frequent attempt at a misalliance between the vital and the spiritual, a mystic experience within, with an aestheticized intellectual and sensuous paganism or exalted hedonism outside, leaning upon it, satisfying itself in the glow of a spiritual sanction. For this, too, is a precarious and never successful compromise, and it is as far from the divine truth and its integrality as the puritanic opposite. These are all stumbling solutions of the fallible human mind, groping for a transaction between the high spiritual summits and the lower pitch of the ordinary mind motives and life motives. Whatever partial truth may be hidden behind them, that truth can only be accepted when it has been raised to the spiritual level, tested in the supreme truth consciousness, and extricated from the soil and error of the ignorance. In sum, SUM, in addition, it may be safely affirmed that no solution offered can be anything but provisional until a supramental truth consciousness is reached, by which the appearances of things are put into their place and their essence revealed, and that in them which derives straight from the spiritual essence. In the meanwhile, our only safety is to find a guiding law of spiritual experience, or else to liberate a light within that can lead us on the way until that greater direct truth consciousness is reached above us or born within us. For all else in us that is only outward, all that is not a spiritual sense or seeing, the constructions, representations, or conclusions of the intellect, the suggestions or instigations of the life force, the positive necessities of physical themes, are sometimes half-lights, sometimes false lights, that can, at best, only serve for a little while, or serve a little, and for the rest, either detain or confuse us. The guiding law of spiritual experience can only come by an opening of human consciousness to the divine consciousness. And there must be the power to receive in us the working and command and dynamic presence of the divine Shakti and surrender ourselves to her control. It is that surrender and that control which brings the guidance. But the surrender is not sure. There is no absolute certitude of the guidance so long as we are besieged by mind formations and life impulses and instigations of ego, which may easily betray us into the hands of a false experience. This danger can only be countered by the opening of a now 9/10 concealed inmost soul or psychic being that is already there, but not commonly active within us. That is the inner light we must liberate. For the light of this inmost soul is our one sure illumination, so long as we walk still amidst the siege of the ignorance, and the truth consciousness has not taken up the entire control of our Godward endeavor. The working of the divine force in us, under the conditions of the transition, and the light of the psychic being turning us always towards a conscious and seeing obedience to that higher impulsion, and away from the demands and instigations of the forces of the ignorance, and these between them create an ever-progressive inner law of our action, which continues till the spiritual and supramental can be established in our nature. In the transition, there may well be a period in which we take up all life and action and offer them to the divine for purification, change, deliverance of the truth within them. Another period in which we draw back and build a spiritual wall around us, admitting through its gates only such activities as consent to undergo the law of the spiritual transformation. And a third, in which a free and all-embracing action, but with new forms fit for the utter truth of the Spirit, can again be made possible. These things, however, will be decided by no mental rule, but in the light of the soul within us, and by the ordaining force and progressive guidance of the divine power that secretly or overtly first impels, then begins clearly to control and order, and finally takes up the whole burden of the yoga. In accordance with the triple character of the sacrifice, we may divide works, too, into a triple order. The works of knowledge, the works of love, the works of the will in life. And just see how this more plastic spiritual rule applies to each province and affects the transition from the lower to the higher nature. It is natural from the point of view of the yoga to divide into two categories the activities of the human mind in its pursuit of knowledge. There is the supreme supra-intellectual knowledge, which concentrates itself on the discovery of the One and Infinite in its transcendence, or tries to penetrate by intuition, contemplation, direct inner contact into the ultimate truths behind the appearances of nature. And there is the lower science, which diffuses itself in an outward knowledge of phenomena, the disguises of some central principle common to all, which will include and utilize in the right place and proportion their particular principles. And on some central dynamic force, which is the common secret of their divergent methods, and capable, therefore, of organizing a natural selection and combination of their varied energies and different utilities. Well, this was the aim which we set before ourselves at first, when we entered upon our comparative examination of the methods of nature and the methods of yoga. And now we return to it, with the possibility of hazarding some definite solution. And here we will pause for today, and continue in this vein in the next episode. Thank you for listening to Auroville Radio, Sri Aurobindo, Synthesis of Yoga, wishing you light for the highest good of all concerned. Ralanka signing off.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.